All right. So hopefully you have the review in front of you. Now, let me state, and I've said this a couple of times, writing a review for the European history test is a challenge because so many of the questions deal with, hey, here's a painting. Hey, here's a passage. And it is just super difficult to write a really super detailed review without giving away everything that you might like without, I don't know if that makes sense to you. But I've tried to give you an idea of every single that you're going to see on the final exam. Okay. The final exam is roughly 50 questions, multiple choice, and then two essays. You got an SAQ and an LEQ. And I'll go over those specific things at the end of the review. Because that's where it is. Okay. So anyways, just please know I have tried to give as much information as possible. Especially I don't write the test and it's just a difficult test. No, it's not a difficult test. It's difficult to write the review because of what I was saying with all the stuff there. All right. Anyways, enough of that. Let's get going. So first up there, the late, and I've got my notes typed out in front of me. So if it looks like I'm reading something, I probably am just because I want to give you as much information as possible. And I typed it. So I went overboard so I can be sure and read my stuff because I can't read my writing anymore. I got to just stop writing. But anyways, the late 20th century compared to pre-World War I Europe. Alrighty, so we're looking or thinking about the political, economics, just all the different things that are happening in Europe from the late 20th century compared to right before World War I. And you could be getting into stuff here about I don't want to say push, but kind of the beginnings of globalization, maybe might be a way to say it. European integration, people using some of the European models that were out there. Think of some of the names that are around, Bismarck and people like that. And so we're starting to think decolonization a little bit here as well. Technology. So just all those things are going to factor into this set of questions for pre-World War I Europe compared to the late 20th century. Right, the next thing is a 1950 poster created by the French Communist Party. So that's actually what you're going to see on the test is a poster created by them. And then you just have to answer some questions based on your knowledge and things like that. So it is obviously going to reflect the party's political messaging. It is a little bit of propaganda, a little bit of visual communication as well during the Cold War era. Alrighty. And so, when you're looking at this and you're trying to answer the questions, you got to be thinking about the political climate of the day. So, the 1950s in Europe, okay, and what's going on there with the Cold War, the interactions between America and Russia. The Soviet Union, be thinking about the interactions between some of the European countries and their neighbor, with Russia and what's happening. So it can give you, so you'll have to think about the political climate of the time, the ideologies that people were operating under, propaganda tactics, stuff like that. Sadullah Pasha, Ottoman intellectual, the 19th century poem. So there's a poem that you'll answer some questions on about the time period. And so Pasha was a Ottoman intellectual. His poem is going to give you some insights into the Ottoman society, the politics, the culture of that time period. And just remember the Ottoman Empire is something that it at the time of this writing, 1878, is doing pretty well. They're doing okay, but something that will after World War I, will stop. They get turned into Turkey and things like that. Transformations by the 1920s and 30s. So this topic was just really kind of difficult. But explores the transformations that occurred in Europe during the interwar period. So think about the times between World War One and World War Two, and it's all the things that are going on. If you're familiar with the 20s in America, and just things going well, Europe was different because Europe was kind of still rebuilding, but they were getting to a point where they had rebuilt, and they were getting to a point where there were some good stuff happening. And you had, it wasn't all. You still had economic challenges because of the complete rebuild of so many places in Europe. You did have social changes happening. You had cultural movements, changes happening. Then, the 30s come along and we see the rise of totalitarianism. Sorry, I couldn't spit that out. Hitler and his things. And so just, thinking about all those topics and things that are going on in Europe at the time. All right, German propaganda, the 30s. I think y'all are probably familiar with a lot of this stuff, but German propaganda, this is going to be a huge part of the Nazi campaign to get people to support them, get people on their side. You have probably, maybe not, you probably saw some, but you probably have seen propaganda, maybe not always in this class, but just elsewhere. But some of the stuff that they put out there. But the big thing here is that the propaganda was put out to try and get support for the Nazi ideology, for their movement, for getting people in power. Because I remember the Nazis, they took power legally. They went through the election process and got people elected and whatnot. And a lot of that stuff comes from the propaganda that they put out there. Industrial production in Eastern Europe post-World War II. There's a chart that you're going to look at. So there's not much to say here. Just know you're going to see a visual with some numbers about this and just how Europe was doing industrially after that time. Ukrainian underground protest song in the 1930s. So there are some lyrics from this song. This is going to be about the resistance of Soviet Russian policies and some of their repression that was going on with them. So think about those themes when you're reading the poem. Another chart on industrial production, 1900 to 1938. Once again, not much to say here. Same thing with the next two, map analysis, cartoon analysis. There are several questions on the test where you will take a look at a map. Take a look at a cartoon, and you'll have to pull some information from the map or from the cartoon, and maybe use your knowledge of that time that it's talking about or discussing in your answering. Political instability in the 19th century. So this was characterized by significant political instability. Revolutions were happening, uprisings, wars. This is that time frame where we saw a lot of the revolutions happening was during this time. Okay, and so it's the question is there's a couple questions just about how these things can lead to political instability. So when if there is a revolution, alrighty, and people start to question the government and things like that, it makes it tough for the government to keep control and really do operate like it's kind of supposed to. So think about those kinds of things, those kind of thoughts when you're looking at this question. All right, Cold War crisis exposing England and France. So England and France, as much as they were the kind of the leaders during the war. Post-war, they had a lot of rebuilding to do, a lot of struggles going on. And this question is getting at basically that happening. England, France, they had been kind of the leaders of Europe almost, I guess would be the best way to say it, for so long. And then now after the war, I don't want to say they're struggling to make ends meet, but it's not the best of times for them, and they're not the world leader that they had been. So that's all that question is getting at. Lenin's New Economic Policy. So that is the NEP, you might see it as. And that was the retreat from the strict socialism that Soviet Russia had implemented in the early 20s. And remember, this is where you're going to see some private enterprise and market mechanism. So basically, Lenin recognizes, hey, the economy is not doing so well. After the Russian Civil War, and we need to make some changes. And so he starts to institute or pull away from the complete socialism that had been and start to give some private ownership. All right. So what let citizens, maybe businesses own their stuff and operate in kind of a, I don't want to say capitalist because it definitely wasn't that, but give them just more freedom economically than people had had in a long time. The Versailles Treaty of 1919. So this is the one that ended World War I. And remember, this is going to really treat Germany very harshly. Remember, Germany wasn't even invited to the summit to hammer this thing out. And we can trace a lot of stuff that happens in World War II back to this treaty because Germany was on the hook for like $33 billion. They had to take all the blame for the World War I and just other things that really put Germany behind everybody else and led to a lot of just unhappiness, feeling wronged, feeling mistreated, feelings that the Germans had, which allowed, was part of the reason that allowed Hitler to come to power. Soviet support chart analysis. So you're going to see a chart on the Soviet support. And if I remember correctly, it's during the Cold War era. So it'll be something along those lines. But it's the chart and the information is there. 1956 revolt in Hungary and the 1968 revolt in Czechoslovakia. So these were pretty big uprisings against Soviet-backed powers, rulers, however you want to say it, during the Cold War era. Alrighty, the Hungarian Revolution and the Prague Spring of 68. Basically, they were looking for political reform. They were looking for independence. And really, at the end of the day, just freedom from the Soviets, okay? Get away, get from under the Soviet umbrella. European Economic Community. So the EEC was established in 1957, the Treaty of Rome. and it's kind of the grandfather or the father, I don't know how to say it, of the European Union. So the European Union people are like, well, that's a new idea. Well, no, it was something that the Europeans had done prior to this, but it's going to promote economic freedom, free trade amongst all the European Union members, basically. Gorbachev, when he became leader of the Soviet Union, so he becomes leader in 1985, and he is going to begin to reform Russia almost right away. Think of some of the things that some of the terms you might have seen in your reading, perestroika, that's the restructuring of Russia, the government, and trying to restructure some of the social systems. Glasnost, that's the openness. So Russia had been so closed off. And that's why we'll never know probably ever how many people were murdered during the Red Purge. You know, when Stalin was after everybody that he thought was an enemy, he was pretty much everybody. We'll never know how many people were just whisked away because Russia was so close. And so he's looking to open it up. So just when you see this question, it's probably going to be about something to do with Gorbachev opening Russia back up or opening it up for the first time. Let's see the graph of the voting by party in the German elections from 28 to 32. So you'll get some numbers here and you'll take a look at it and have to answer some questions about this. But this is the time when the Nazis are rising to power. And once you remember, they did take it, they did get voted in. German unification, 19th century and late 20th century. So Bismarck is going to be getting a lot of credit for this in the 19th century. And then after the Berlin Wall fell in the late 80s, early 90s, are going to, Germany's going to, there used to be a Western and Eastern German countries, and then they got unified after the Berlin Wall fell. 19th century liberal revolts. So this witnessed revolts across Europe including all those 1848 revolutions. And basically, the theme amongst most of them were, constitutionalism. So we want some kind of constitution. We want some kind of something in place, some kind of structure in place. Nationalism, that desire to be your own free country out from underneath, whoever it was that was in charge of you, whatever country it was. Individual rights, okay? Get away from the monarch. Let us have free will, basically. Conservative government of Margaret Thatcher. I can't talk right now. So she was the prime minister from 79 to 90, and she instituted some super conservative policies. excuse me, Thatcherism. And so she's going to, deregulate. That's a conservative policy of deregulating some of the businesses, corporations, let them do their thing. Privatization, so more individual choice, people, businesses owning and making choices in the economic free market. Let the market decide. The government shouldn't be involved, is all free market means. And so keep the government out of these choices. The Prague Spring, kind of talked about this earlier, but this was that political liberalization and reform in Czechoslovakia in the late 60s, 68 to be specific. And they were trying to get out from underneath the footprint of the Soviet and the military, Soviet military. All right. They wanted political freedom. And once again, just to get away from the Soviet Union. Collapse of the Soviet Union in the 90s. So 91 is when we attribute the official collapse. And we also mark this as the end of the Cold War and the dissolution of the largest communist state the world had at the time. And remember, they were broken up. You had all kinds of independent states crop up in Eastern Europe, Central Asia. There are still issues today, geopolitical issues. We're not going to try and get into all those things of how the Cold War and the ending of it led to some of the situations we're in today. Let's see, the Treaty of European Union, Maastricht, and I'm probably saying that very wrong treaty. This was signed in 92, and it laid the foundations for the European Union. It established, integrating some European, integrating basically the, as ones, so like Italy, France, things like that, into kind of one Europe. So think of the Euro coming about in 92. That's when that's going to happen. Congress of Vienna, 1815, and the Versailles Conference of 1919. So in 1815, they were looking to restore stability and order in Europe after the Napoleonic Wars, while Versailles is going to look to build back after World War I. So that's kind of where we're going with this question. About what might can be considered some of the similarities. The Irish question, that refers to a super complex political question that the English were looking to answer. And the Irish question was just about Ireland's relationship with Britain. And think of all the things there, like who should rule? Should the Irish people rule themselves? Should England stay there? Irish nationalism, wanting to be their own, things like that. Bismarck, so Otto von Bismarck, we know that name, Prussian statesman, central role in unifying Germany in the 1870s. He's going to implement the policy of Realpolitik, where he is looking to build relationships and just try and take care of social welfare, diplomatically, work some magic. He had his fingerprints all over Europe, basically, during this time. Mussolini's government, so he was the fascist dictator of Italy prior to World War II and during World War II. His government promoted nationalist, authoritarian, and militaristic policies and really was aggressive. Looking to expand. Remember, they're going to invade Ethiopia during this time because of some supposed grudge against Ethiopia from back in the day, long time ago. And so there is that. I will say you haven't been to Italy a few times. No one over there thinks highly of him. They don't like the only thing he did right, the only thing they like was that he got the trains around time. Let's see, the Locarno era. So this is the period of diplomatic agreements and treaties signed in Locarno, Switzerland. So it's a place in 25, and it was looking to secure peace and stability in Europe after World War I. Mainly Germany was the heart of this, with the things Germany was doing, the things that had been done in Germany, trying to make some changes. Great Depression, the responses of major governments. So you probably are familiar with the Great Depression in America. It also hit around the world in the 30s, and it was just something that was a huge crisis and something that governments across the world had to contend with. And you know, things that governments around the world are going to look to do, spend deficits. Our deficit spending is a better way to say it. Spend more than they're bringing in because they weren't bringing in very much, but they got to spend to try and get out of the Great Depression. Public works programs, so let's try and provide as much as possible. This will also provide jobs. Trying to protect their home goods, trying to protect their currencies, just any kind of economic policy you can think of where the government is trying to protect. Hyperinflation in Germany. So hyperinflation. This happened because basically the Germans were like, well, we owe this money. We're just going to print off as much money as possible. And so they just went nuts. And so the German money during this time frame was just worth absolutely nothing. Okay, there are some famous pictures out there of like kids sitting on a throne of German money because it was worth nothing. You have pictures of people taking wheelbarrows of German cash to buy bread. And things like that. And this is going to be one of the things that contributes to, you know, the Nazis and their rise. Say, take a look at the situation. Take a look at, you know, going back to the Great Depression. Take a look at what's happening in Germany here. And then you see the money's worth nothing. And so it's really a sticking point for the people of Germany. Stalin, early. So Joseph Stalin, when he's first going to take over, he's going to rule the Soviet Union from the 20s until his death in the early 50s. Okay. And in the early years, remember, he is going to take all the power. So it's not just like, hey, well, here's a few pockets. He takes everything. And he's going to look to industrialize Russia, catch them up with, excuse me, with the Europeans, collectivization, that's where you have the collective farms and things like that. Also, we mentioned the purges earlier, so something that he's going to get into. Get into, that sounds horrible. So, you know, he was very much concerned with people trying to overthrow him, take over. And so he's going to do, everybody was an enemy to him. Pre-World War II signals, so pre-World War II signals, that's going to refer to some of the warning signs that were out there. You had the tensions in Europe, you had conflict in Europe, you had all these things going on that people could have looked at and, you know, maybe had a pretty good idea that something's about to blow that's going to lead to World War II. Now, it's tough to say that, or it's easy to say that today because, hey, you know, World War II happened and we know this and we have looked at it and studied it and all that kind of stuff. But when you think about the disputes that were going on territories, people building up their militaries, expansion, throw in the economic problems that you know the world was facing, and you get these problems that you know we look now and say, well, yeah, that was a pretty good precursor to World War II. They probably should have seen that coming. Although, once again, hindsight is 2020, and we can't take into account the fact of what had happened in World War I and how much people wanted to stay out of a conflict. Let's see, the Dawes Plan and the Young Plan. So the Dawes and the Young Plan, these were international agreements, and they were aimed at resolving Germany's reparation payments and stabilizing its economy after World War I. Basically, these plans are going to be loans to Germany to repay some of the stuff they owed from the Treaty of Versailles. And it was basically, hey, you owe these people money. We'll loan you the money. You pay them off, but then you owe us money. It was quite the jigsaw or whatever you would call it, puzzle. Cooperative state. So the state was a political economic model adopted by fascist regimes in Italy and other countries, and it emphasized the collaboration between the state, corporations, and labor unions to kind of control economic activity. And then the provisional government in Russia, this is in 1917. This was established after the abdication of Tsar Nicholas II during the February Revolution of 17, and it aimed to transition Russia to a constitutional monarchy or democracy. And you know, part of this is part of the reason America felt comfortable getting into World War I was because of this, and the desire that they stated to get a constitution. They could not anticipate it would not last long. Okay. All right. So that is the multiple choice. So I'm going to take a stop here for just a second. So I was stopping the recording. And so I'm going to do a second recording for the FRQ. So the FRQs, you got an SAQ and an LAQ. So short and a long. The short deals with Darwin, Freud, and Einstein. So I'll talk a little bit about them. And then we'll talk about the long. And you're going to write this into your program, the testing program. The questions are there. Just you don't have to wait. You just answer your multiple choice questions, and then you pop right into the essays. Okay. So Darwin, he is famous for the theory of evolution, natural selection, and things like that. He will write on the origin of species and just talking about the basically, he's challenging a lot of religious beliefs, societal norms with his discussion, with his writing on evolution. And that's probably the big takeaway from him. Freud is going to be a founder of psychoanalysis. If you've taken a psych class, you have talked about him and learned about him. And he is big into the clinical method for treating mental disorders. He will develop theories about the unconscious. You probably have heard of the id, the ego, the superego, and all those things. We're not looking to get into all those right now. But that was, you know, his stuff. And basically, we all have thoughts. We all have things in our subconscious that we might do, but they're in our subconscious. We're not going to go and act them out and do them in the real world. Okay. And he's, you know, that's new for the people of Europe during the time. All right. So this is, you know, groundbreaking stuff when he's writing about our subconsciousness, the analysis of our subconsciousness, the unconscious mind, and what people want to do all that time. Einstein, you know, famous equation, E equals MC squared. Now, as a non-math person, I'm not sure exactly where E equals MC squared fits into the whole thing. I think it's a physics thing, but I, you know, that's beyond me. All right, but he came up with that. German-born theory of relativity, the physics, E equals MC squared, and is really kind of the poster boy scientist. You know, that's probably a wrong way of saying it, but he is going to be a symbol for people and for reason and intellectual curiosity and just exploring all those things, even despite all the stuff that's going on around him. Okay, you know, remember he'll leave Europe during this time, and because of the political upheaval, the wars, World War II, and what's going on there. So there is that. All right, lastly is scientific racism from the 1850s to the 1930s. The question is going to ask you basically about the change in kind of race relations, if I remember correctly, from the 1850s to the 1930s. And so that's what you're going to be getting into. And some things you probably want to touch on is like colonialism and how that affected people's views of other cultures and other races and whatnot. And then some of the changes that happen as we get into World War One, some of the changes that happen as we start to decolonize, as the Europeans start to decolonize, what's happening there. I think that would be sufficient. But that is the longer one. So the long, the LEQ for that one. All right. 32 minutes. Not bad. All right. So, reminders. Everything's due Sunday the 28th. Be sure and get everything turned in that you want to get turned in. I'll be clearing out drop boxes this week, hopefully tomorrow, Monday, the 29th. No Zoom this week. So this was the Zoom. I wish you the best of luck. I told you this in the email, but I wish you all the best of luck on this final and all your finals, on all your AP exams, and just everything you do. Y'all are have been a good bunch, great bunch to work with, and I think this is pretty mixed. I think there's some seniors, some juniors. So wherever you are on your academic journey, I am happy and glad that I got to be a part of your journey, and I wish you the best of luck on the next step, whatever that might be, whether it is finishing off your senior year or you're going on to be a freshman in college, whatever it might be. If I can ever, ever, ever help you, I'm an email away, and I'll do what I can to help you out. All right, guys, take care. Have a great week, great summer, and I'll see you when I see you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Recording stopped.